Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that's familiar slap of the bass. It is time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Well, let's see. This is week three, I believe, of our fights on ESPN on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This week, we were also treated to a Saturday. Had some very good bouts last week. And we're going to talk about some of those bouts. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame ceremony, of course. It has, even though it's been put off until 2021, the class of 2020 has been announced. And we have some boxing greats. Modern-day boxing greats involved, as well as we're going to be talking to Miss Melissa Smith. She's going to tell us about some of the ladies that are going to be inducted and the work that she has done. Of course, we're going to talk to the heavyweight champ, who at times has been a defender of Big Baby Miller. So we're going to see what he thinks right now, whether or not Big Baby should be suspended for life, or exactly, what does he think the punishment should be for someone that has actually failed three drug tests? That I think that kind of brings into account who was Big Baby. Was Big Baby ever a contender, or was he always a cheater? We have some of the top boxing experts, however you want to categorize them, John Scully and Lehman Brewster, who have spent their lives in this sport, and see what they think about this whole situation here. I'm going to grab Scully right quick, and let's see. I should know Scully's number by heart. I know he was having it. Let's see if he was able to. Let's see. We're going to have to try to get Scully on this other line here. I think this. Mr. Scully. I thought I saw Scully there in the line. Let me see if I can call him right quick. He did give me another number to call him on. Okay, let's see if I can get in here. Sorry about the interruption, everyone. All right. See how this works out. Okay, this should be a story here. We're dialing. Seems like we can't get in touch with Mr. Scully, so let's talk about what has been happening in our sport. As I said, very strange to me why we're waiting for boxing commissions and the stalwarts of our sport to stand up and speak out. So far, we've only had one boxing commission that has spoken out and said that if there's no action taken, that they would suspend Big Baby's license. And I think rightly so. If you've proven to be a cheater every time that someone...
As I can. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
Well, seems like we can't get in touch with Mr. Scully either. Okay. So, as I was saying, if you're proven to be a cheater, I think that you should be banned from the sport of boxing for life. I was never a real big fan of Big Baby, so maybe comments or suggestions from Big Baby, maybe they come from a place of where I was never convinced that he was this talent that everyone thought that he was. I thought he was just a big guy that was in the right place at the right time. And I never saw that dedication or that spark in his eye to let you know that he wanted to be a champion, to let you know that his time in the ring was meaningful. I understand, you know, we always condemn people, that we don't think are dedicated to the sport. And I always thought that Big Baby was a good B-side fighter. Thought he liked the charisma. And I also thought that he lacked the ability. I never saw him being in that top tier of champions or the top tier of the heavyweight division, even though the heavyweight division at the time that he came in was probably at his lowest point here in the United States. We had Deontay Wilder as the champion. He had one belt, but everyone was talking about Anthony Joshua. Everyone was talking about Tyson Fury. When Ruiz upset Joshua, they were talking about that. We talked about boxers that fighters when they started, Big Baby was, you know, maybe wasn't even born when you talk about Ortiz. Nobody really knows Ortiz's age, but he claims to be in his late 40s. So let's just go with that. He still has two decades almost on Big Baby. You talk about Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder both trained at Crom Gym under the late, great Emmanuel Stewart. I never saw, the big names going after Big Baby or taking under his wing. Ronnie Shields as another young heavyweight. It was surprising. He has a young man that's on upcoming prospects in the heavyweight division. The young man looks very good, and maybe after another three or four fights, I think he's Big Baby would be a good knockout for Alajide. I'll try to read it like that. I think he would be a great opponent for as a stepping stone. Now, if you want to call Big Baby maybe a gatekeeper or someone like that, fine. But even then, you're a cheater. You are a cheater. In society, there's a three-strike law. Why should we not have the same in boxing? Of course, we have these guys, they can't box here in the United States, so they decided, maybe to go to Mexico. I'm not sure what's going on with the phone here. Scotty says, let's see if I can get him in. Okay, let's see.
Hello,
Scully. Do I have you in now?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. The circuit board is pretty busy right now. So let's see. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. You're a little distant, but I can hear you.
Okay. All right. I guess, first of all, how are you and the family and everyone doing? I know you're back east. Are you in Connecticut or are you in New York?
No, I'm in Connecticut right now. And everything's good, but our gym opened up on Monday, so that's a good sign.
Well, you're one of the only two states that have noted any decline, Connecticut and Rhode Island.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're lucky, but we've been open for a week, and so far so good.
Okay. So, with the gym now, is it on an appointment basis, or is it back open on a public basis? And how are you doing with social distancing and things like that?
Well, as luck would have it, we have a vacant lot right across the street from the gym. So we've been able to take the kids out there and, utilize that. So, so far it's been good. Everything's been fine. We have a limit of, 18 boxers a day,
Okay. And, like I said, you guys are among some of the safest in the United States right now. So, do you have fighters coming in from other states and whatnot, or are all these kind of local guys that have been around waiting for this?
It's been the locals, but what the plan is, I'm actually in the process of training a fighter out of Montreal, and so we're trying to work it out now where he'll be able to come to come in across the border, but as of right now, we're just trying to get the paperwork in order.
Oh well, since you brought that up, how are things going with your guy up there in Montreal, Mr. Benavides? I mean, excuse me.
Right, better be if, yes, sir. as of right now, everything's still basically on hold, just waiting to hear. So it's still up in the air, I guess you could say.
Things, I mean, you said you submitted the paperwork for a fighter, so they are at least taking those measures into consideration, I think, before it was completely closed, right?
Right, right, yeah. But, they have to get special permission. Yeah.
So, I know that you've been pretty much up on it. So what did you think about the Hall of Fame class of 2020?
Everything was in order. It was going to be a great event. I thought it was a solid group from what I was seeing, but unfortunately we got to wait till next year. So it's going to be, you know, I don't know how they're going to do it with two classes in 1 year, because it's usually pretty busy on induction day, and to have to do two of them, I don't know exactly how they're going to work that out.
Now, you usually have an event planned to go along with that, because you're usually always there. So do you have anything planned for 2021, especially now that you've had some extra time to plan?
Right. Yeah, we're going to definitely do something, that weekend. I'm actually trying to work on something with Milton Luban in New York, who helps me out with different things, and he has a lot of connections. And I'm hoping that we could come together and, do something, super big, something very, very big. Now, obviously, we'll have a lot of time to plan it. So we'll see. But hopefully, I have a feeling, I've been letting some of my guys know around the country that, whenever this thing is over, when it's finally over, we're going to do something extra big, either in New York Las Vegas. Hopefully we can do something huge. So I've got all my guys I'm kind of laying the groundwork now, letting everybody know. So I'm hoping that we're going to do something big.
Yeah, it would be very nice for something like that to happen. I mean, we're all trying to wait to get out of the house and to make sure that we're safe. We're, 3 weeks now into Top Rank and having boxing on ESPN, of course, without the audiences. Have you been able to keep up with any of it? And what do you think about the presentation now? You don't have all the crowd noise. You can actually get, if you want to listen, you can actually get into the corners and listen to what the corners are saying and listen to what's going on round by round. You can actually, in some cases, like the fight we had last night, you could actually hear the body shots land and the opponent, giving it. It's really kind of up close and personal now. So, as a fan, as a diehard fan, I'm kind of getting used to it. I kind of like it without having all the distractions. What do you think, Scully?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, it's very interesting. It's the different dynamic. Obviously, that isn't going to last. I think it's very interesting. People are getting a glimpse into a different part of boxing that they haven't been, used to having a glimpse into. So I think this is opening up a new avenue for certain people, to be able to see how things are really going on in the corner. And, it's almost like being at a dress rehearsal for a movie. You're there behind the scenes almost, getting to see things that you never would see before.
Do you think it's a help to boxing? Now the fans are used to, they happen to watch and look at it at a different perspective. Maybe they'll bring that back, when we're allowed to have a certain amount of fans in the arena.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm it's a funny thing. Things happen for a reason. And, it could be, they'll maybe the powers that be, with the TV and stuff, they could, see how this is unfolding, and maybe they could incorporate some of this insight into, you know, into future broadcasts on a permanent basis. You never know. There could be a silver lining, you know, going forward. They could, you know, they could utilize some of these things that they're able to use now.
As someone that's also been, you know, involved in broadcasting, what do you think, you know, like now do the broadcasters, let's see, how can I put this? Do you think that now that people have to listen to the commentary and the commentary, you know, they're not ringside anymore? Do you think
right.
it also gives do you think it also gives them a different perspective? Because
well,
you know, you're all basically watching from the same angle.
Right. Well, not just that, I'll tell you another thing that's very interesting, I think, is when you watch fights on TV, you know, the crowd noise and the emotion you know, plays a big part. It really does. And announcers and fighters and everybody involved feeds, even the other fans feed off of it. You know, I've been in fights, you know, as a fighter where, you know, I would get hit with a shot that maybe wasn't that hard of a shot, but I hear the whole crowd screaming loudly, you know, and I think, man, they think I got hit with a huge shot. And so, it, you know, it's a dynamic that's added. And now with no crowd, you know, a fight could seem less entertaining than it actually is, because it's almost like watching, when you watch a Rocky movie, people don't even realize, I think, subconsciously, that when they watch a Rocky movie, the sound effects are put in, you know, they're edited in when the guy hits, you know, Apollo Creed hits Rocky with a body shot and it makes a big noise. So that adds to it. Being there live without the crowd, you know, you kind of take some of that away. And so the announcers might actually need to be a little bit more theatrical and into the fight a little bit more, because they don't have that you know, that dynamic in the background any longer.
Yeah, that I think we've all spoken about you know, that dynamic, that even the ring walk, you don't have the ring walk anymore. I mean, you know, those things usually help to get a fighter, you know, maybe if he's going in with the jitters, you know, it maybe it gives him that little extra confidence, you know, to walk into the crowd. Were you able to watch any of the fights yesterday?
Actually, no, I was out of town. I just came back like a half an hour before we went on the air. I just came back, so I was out of town, and you know, but I was reading a few things online, and you know, but it feels so surreal. It's almost like, and I think people might understand what I mean, it's almost like the fights, like they're not even real fights. It's almost like preseason in baseball. You know, there's something, you know, it's just, I think you might understand a little bit of what I mean. But I think, you know, it's missing a little something. You know, it's almost like a dress rehearsal until the big stuff really gets back. And you know, it's just a very weird time in our sport and in our history.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You know, when I watched the bouts yesterday, you see Michelt, you know, he handles his opponent very easily, which he was supposed to do. But I was going to ask you about that 130-pound division. It seems to be pretty packed right now. I think, you know, usually we're talking about, you know, 147 and up. But there's been a lot of action with these smaller guys, 132, 136. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I have been paying a little bit of attention to you know, Devin Haney and Lomachenko and Teofimo and, you know, the things that are going on with those guys, you know, and it is what it is, like, you know, media manipulation and, you know, social media and all these things at work, you know, we're building something big there. Like, those are going to be, you know, big fights with those guys, especially if you could get like Haney and Teofimo and Ryan Garcia. I think it's very interesting how they are utilizing social media, you know, kind of following Floyd's example over the years, and they're turning into something, you know, it's just a new day, and these guys are getting very well known and the buzz just from Facebook and Twitter, pretty much. So I'm actually, because of that, I'm actually interested to see what's going to be happening. I noticed quite a bit. Mickey Bay, who's a good friend of mine, he's been training with Haney, helping Devin, and he's been posting quite a few videos of Devin doing his road work and doing mitt work and all these different things. So I've kind of got a glimpse into Haney that I never really had before. So, you know, it's working. I'm interested, and I think a lot of other people, because the comments under the pictures are very, you know, lengthy. So I think, you know, those guys are getting built up. Even in this, you know, off time with the virus, they're not slacking. You know, they're utilizing social media to keep their names out there in a big way.
Yes. Yeah, yes, they are. Like Haney and those guys, I think they've taken a good advantage of like you said, social media, and this time where they can kind of pick out the shine. Two big names as far as COVID-19, Roberto Duran and Jamal Herring. What were your thoughts, especially when you heard about the great hands of Stone?
Right. It was, I'll tell you what, it just, you know, being realistic, I mean, it just shows you no one is immune to this, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, foolishly and subconsciously, you know, they might think like a super famous legend wouldn't get it. He wouldn't be in a position to get it. Somehow he's got these mystical powers that would prevent him from getting. But here you have one of the top 10, maybe greatest fighters of all time. And he's got it. He's in the hospital. You know, and that should really open people's eyes. Because, you know, and I'm sure you do too. I know people, I've seen people who actually are thinking that this isn't legit. You know, that this is simply a form of the flu and that's it. That's all it is. You know, I think having, if there's a positive to come from Duran getting it, it's to prove that anybody can get it.
Yeah. That's like you say, I mean, that's kind of a you know, that's not how you want to look at it, but it's just a part of the facts, you know, that you have to. Big Baby tests positive for a third time.
Yeah,
I said three times. You know, in society, they only get three strikes and you're out. You know, that means they lock you up and throw away. Time we do the same thing in boxing?
You should. I mean, it's gotten ridiculous. Like, this is, it's almost like if you didn't know this for sure, you'd say, there's no way. He couldn't be that dumb. He couldn't be that careless. You know, anybody in the world getting caught like this again and again, it's just a phenomenon. I don't know how, you know, and I think not in defense of him at all, to the contrary, but I think a lot of these guys who don't know what they're doing with it, I think they rely on people who they think know, and a guy might tell them, all you got to do is drink vinegar and you'll mask the results. And, you know, like you hear all these, you know, stories and, you know, urban legends or whatever you want to call it. And I think a lot of people simply just listen to people and believe it. And because that's got to be the only excuse. Like he couldn't possibly have done it knowing he'd get caught, like thinking he would get caught. He must have thought he was going to disguise it, and he couldn't have done it on his own. So somebody must have told him, don't worry, you'll be fine, and it backfired again. But you know, I'm glad, you know, I'm at the point where I'm glad when guys get caught. I don't care who they are. Like, if you, you know, if you're doing it, good. I'm glad you got caught, because this is just, you know, it's just too much. Like, it's getting, you know, it's been ridiculous, but it's getting, you know, it hurts me, you know, because I, you know, I still want to give people the benefit of the doubt that they're clean and that they, you know, that's what they, how they live their careers. And, you know, it's just, it's devastating. And I just, you know, he has, obviously he has no respect for the game. He has no, you know, he's just looking to capitalize physically so he can make money, more money, and get his opportunity. But, you know, at the peril of, you know, damaging boxing and damaging history and your own career, your own legacy. You know, so I think there's a lot of different angles that are extremely negative, you know, just with this one positive result.
Look, now, Scully, you know, and here's what kind of gets to me, you know. Do you have to doubt now, you know, whether or not he ever had the ability? I mean, you know, if you always have to have that edge of doping, you know, does that mean that you lack self-confidence and you think that you need that type of edge? I mean, you know, did he just get that habit of just becoming a pro? I mean, doesn't that thing his whole career?
But it puts it, of course, it puts it in doubt, you know, and I think there's essentially like three different type of guys. You know, there's a guy who would never do an illegal drug. You know, he wants to win on his own, or if he can't win on his own, then that's it. He can't win. You know, he's above board 100%. You know, you get some guys that they want to win and they want to, you know, just take their best opportunity, and you know, they don't see anything wrong with getting a little help, you know, because they figure that's still their boxing skills that are utilizing, that are, you know, resulting in the win. There's other guys who I think, honestly, and I think Big Bailey, Baby's probably fallen into this category. I'm just speculating. I think he doesn't care about boxing. I don't think he cares about his legacy. I think he just wants to make money. I think he wants to win big fights and get the money out of it. I think this is his hustle, you know, and I don't think he cares, you know, he cares that he got caught in the sense of now he can't make any money, you know, but I don't think, you know, his place in history obviously doesn't seem to be really at the front of his mind, you know, on his high on his list of importance, you know, in terms of his legacy going forward. You know, but I, like I say, you know how I feel. I'm really anti-drug. I'm really not a fan of this at all. And it's just, you know, it's sad because, you know, these guys are having help. So it's not just a fighter, you know, somebody's helping them, whether it's a trainer, whether it's, you know, the manager, you know, I don't know who it is, you know, but somebody, these guys aren't just, you know, walking out into the supermarket and buying steroids, you know, they're having help with somebody. And, you know, so it's an infiltration that's, you know, not good from, obviously from where I sit. I'm really, really not a fan of where this thing is going.
Well, Scully, before you go, I got a gentleman in that is very mindful of his legacy and always talks about that and probably, well, no probably in it. I guess you two are probably the most ballistic opponents of anti-doping that we have in the sport, and I'm talking about Relentless Layman Brewster. Layman, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. How y'all doing tonight?
Everything's good, man. Everything's real good.
So I got you and Scully here because, well, as you know, I was talking about Big Baby, and I was, you know, saying, you know, like even in society, three strikes you're out. I mean, you know, we might not agree with it or whatever. But in the sport of boxing, especially when you have so many people, you know, already, you know, looking for conspiracies and you know, something that's negative to talk about. What's your take on this whole Big Baby situation? Do you agree with Scully, you know, like, you know, he's a hustler. He's not looking for a legacy. you know, someone like you, you know, I mean, you've fought all your life to build your reputation and what Relentless Flaming Booster means. So when you see someone, in my words, disrespecting the heavyweight division, what is your thoughts?
Wow. Well, you know, man, to be honest with you, because I don't know him personally, I can't judge to say, you know, whether or not he is a hustler per se. But what I would say is that, gosh, man, it's difficult for me because it's like he's been caught with this stuff more than once, what, two or three times or more? I don't even know at this point. But it's like when a person continually do something, it's like you become habitual with it. So to John Scully's point, it does seem like, okay, well, maybe he's just in this for the money. Because as big as you are, the biggest dude in boxing in the heavyweight division from what I think I know, and you feel like you got to take drugs to win a fight, that says a lot about your heart. But again, I don't know him personally. I don't know if it was something that he was taking that registered as something that he shouldn't have been taking and he didn't know about. Like, I'm not going to make excuses for him, but I'm going to say that him of all people being caught with steroids in the past should have known that, or should I say, this should not be occurring unless, as like I guess you say, what Scully said, man, like this is a hustler, like he's trying to beat the system. But you know, this is a different era of boxing. I don't know understand the mentality of these fighters out here today because we cut from a different cloth. I just don't get it why he would embarrass himself. Everything he worked so hard to be known as, and he had a very promising career, but it should be over. Like three times, it should be over. And I don't even know what to say, man. Like I'm hurt for the brother because I follow the brother, and I just a couple months ago, I just left him a post and just said boxing needs you, and that was just me trying to spur him on. But you know, a guy like me, who, you know, in my prime, my dog fighting weight was 224. I can knock any man out. But this man is 250, 260, whatever. He's a big dude. And he feels like he got to take something versus other fighters that came before him, like myself, that has devastating power. Did he feel like he need that to compete today? I don't get it, and I don't understand, man. I just don't know. It's definitely a black eye on boxing.
Scully, I got to go, you know, take this. I mean, okay, you train fighters. How does a trainer feel? You know, how can you trust training a fighter if you know that he's been caught three times?
Right. I mean, for me, I'll give the benefit of the doubt. I'll assume the trainer had nothing to do with it. You know, I'll go there. The trainer was oblivious to it. I'll assume that. You know, it's disheartening. You know, you want to be a 10. Like I said, I mean, I think I'm naive in a situation, you know, in a certain way. Like, you know, I want to believe that everybody's above board and you know, everybody's clean and everybody just wants to be the champ and everybody wants to, you know, box until they can't box anymore because they love it. And, you know, and I realize more and more that that's obviously not the case. And, you know, we've had some big names in the sport. You know, I don't have to bring them up, but I mean, we've had some big names in the sport, you know, test positive. They've blatantly done it. And, you know, it's rough, man. It's rough for a purist and somebody who really loves the sport at its grassroots, at its core, you know, like I'm the type of guy, like if I was a baseball player, I'd be the guy that loved sandlot baseball, you know, a bunch of kids on a Saturday morning playing in the park that everybody lives near, you know, that's the kind of love I have for boxing. And to see these kind of things, it's really, you know, it gets to me. It really bothers me.
We're joined Scotty, I'm going to let you go, I promise, in a minute, but we also have Melissa Smith here. Melissa, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing really well. How are you all?
Great. I got Scully here, and I have Layman also in the queue. I got to let Scully go, I know. But we're talking about Big Baby Miller testing three times positive for PEDs. Your thoughts on whether he should be banned or not?
Yes, he should definitely be banned. I mean, enough's enough. I mean, he's already scuttled one huge fight. It's just not fair, and it's not right. You know, it's especially now. You know, it's boxing is just going through such a hard time, and it's just disrespectful to the other fighters. I mean, like, never mind that it's disrespectful to his own body, but and that's for him to deal with. But it's just not fair. It's not right. He needs to be gone. He's done.
Scully, thanks for sticking around longer, man. Why don't you, give us your final thoughts and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Always on Iceman John Scully at Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And, I just appreciate everybody sticking in there with the boxing and, you know, hopefully everybody's there for the return. I'm expecting some big, big fights to come up, and I'm going to be doing some big things. Layman, I'll be in touch with you. I'm going to be doing something big, probably in Vegas, New York, or California. We're going to get everybody there this time, to come back from this. So, let's hope boxing picks up where it left off, and we can all do our little part. And I appreciate being on the show, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, Shelly. You have a great night, man.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Good night, everybody. Okay.
All right, Layman, Melissa, and I think since Melissa, I don't know, it seems like, is that the professor? Is the professor here?
No, this is Dave.
Oh, Dave, what's going on? How you doing, man?
I'm all right, on my way to work, just listening.
Hey, before you get there, what do you think about this Big Baby situation, man?
I mean, cheating is cheating. I mean, he needs to really be gone. I mean, it's a dangerous sport out here, man. And, yeah, three times, and plus he did it in martial arts. I mean, he's been cheating for a long time. So, I mean, I think they need to set standards. Two or three times, I think you just need to be gone. It's a dangerous sport, man. And we had a lot of deaths last year, you know?
For those of you that don't know Dave, Dave is a good friend of mine. He lives up around Temecula. But Dave is a former amateur boxer. So he's had some time in the sport, and he's a dedicated hardcore fan. Layman, I know, like I said, being someone that's been so dedicated to the sport of boxing, and I know you don't want to make any personal judgments, but I'm going to ask you, the same thing that I asked Scully, as someone that also believes in giving fighters, another chance or knowing how bad this game is. From a trainer, what do you think, if you were a trainer or a mentor, wouldn't you feel, I want to say let down, but I don't think that's a strong enough term. Would you feel betrayed? I put it like that, because as a fan, that's how I feel. I mean, hey, three times, that we all thought he had a lot of potential. Does that make you question his whole career, Layman?
Yes, it absolutely makes me question his entire career. And I believe somebody just said a minute ago he also got caught for steroids when he was doing martial arts. And so is that a total of 4 times, 3 in boxing and 1 in martial arts? But the point is, even if it's 2 times, that's just too many. 1 time I can maybe get away with, and he can get away with. And I say that because sometimes when a doctor's giving you something, or sometimes you take something, you don't read the label, you know, you don't know if it's a banned substance. That's okay, cool. But when you get caught with it 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, that means that you think you're better than the system. That means you think that you need stuff in order to win, and you don't need to be a fighter. You need to be a gym fighter, and then you can take all the stuff that you want. But for a man or a woman or anybody for that matter to get caught with a banned substance 3 times, there's absolutely nothing you can say. And to your point, if I was his mentor, or if I'm a mentor and a kid or a young man or a young woman, anybody gets caught with that 3 times in their system, me personally, I would feel like the hamster just running on the wheel, not going nowhere, because I'm not going to waste my time with somebody that's going to bring embarrassment to me while I'm putting my hard-earned years of knowledge and wisdom into teaching them and trying to mentor them and try to help them to be the best person, the best fighter that they can be in and out of the ring. It's a slap in the face, man. So I can't speak for the people around him. I can only speak for me. But if I had somebody that got caught 3 times with that stuff, man, I would be like, listen, if you need me to let you in the gym, if you're going to pay some money to come in and train, if you're going to pay me to hold the mitts for you or something, or if you see me in the street, say what's up. Other than that, it ain't nothing to talk about. I never want to talk to you about boxing ever again, as it will pertain to your career, because when I'm associated with a person that what was the dude that had Panama Lewis? Like, anybody associated with Panama Lewis, people gonna look at them side, you know, they look at them sideways now. So it's the same thing. He's the new Panama Lewis because he has to cheat to win, and so that is going to be a stigma that's going to follow him for the rest of his life until he is no longer breathing on this earth, because there's no way on this earth you can come back after having tested positive 3 times and think that you could have a successful career, because the in the minds of people, what he's done will never, ever leave. It'll never leave. And every time he gets his hand raised, people always going to think, man, this dude, he's on drugs. I guarantee you, every time he fights, if he fights, which he shouldn't, but, you know, I'm not the judge of that. I'm only giving you my opinion.
Melissa, you work out at, you know, one of the most famous gyms, not just in New York, but in the world. What does that do to the reputation of the gym that he trains in?
Well, I don't really think it does much, to tell you the truth. I mean, yeah, he trained out of Gleason's, but he hasn't been as associated with the gym, and I don't think it really has much to do with the gym. I mean, look, this is a personal choice he made for whatever his reasons are. He may feel that that's the only way that, you know, he can compete, or he maybe have this attitude, well, everybody's doing it, so I'll do it too. I can't speak to his motivations. But I don't think the gym has anything to do with it. You know, Gleason's is a pretty big gym, and it has a full range of people who train there, from professionals to, you know, kids 8 years old and older folks 80 years old. So it's I wouldn't say that the gym has anything to do with what ultimately happened to him. It may have been that there was some connection he got through the gym to get his drugs. I really can't say. But it's certainly not anything that any of the trainers would support that train out of that gym. And, I really don't think that the Gleason's will take any kind of bad publicity from this, because it's not the kind of thing that's ever really been associated with it, and I don't think it's anything anyone would ever condone. I mean, to me, it's just stupid. I mean, if you got caught once, okay. A second time, really? But a third time, you know, what are you doing here? You're not serious, because the world is looking for this. And if you think you're not going to get tested, it's just dumb, because this is the reality of where we are in sports. And if you want to be in sports at this level, this kind of elite level, that's what's going to happen. So, really, I don't have a lot of sympathy.
Yeah, I'm one of those myself. I have absolutely no sympathy. You know, when you get to that level, you know, but then again, you know, did he ever belong at that level? That's what I have to ask myself now.
Well, that's another thing. But, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people took a chance with him. They really believed in him. They paid a lot of money. You know, they really were trying to make him – get him moved along and get him the kind of fights that was getting him TV time and a lot of other things. And, you know, that's disappointing, because there are a lot of other good fighters out there that don't get those opportunities. And my feeling is, well, okay, you want to blow it? Fine. Let's, you know, move along. Find someone who is willing to do what it takes to do the real work and not cheat, you know. And that's that.
Yeah, definitely have to agree with you. It's been 3 weeks now since we've seen fighting on, well, twice a week. Bob M. This week, we were able to go, we had three bouts this week, Tuesday, Thursday, and yesterday. Let's see. Dave, how are you adjusting to watching these fights without fans? I know, you know, to you, it's probably like, you know, the old time sparring in the gym, you know, but how have you adjusted as a fan? You know, now you can hear the corner instructions. You can hear those hits to the body. You know, is this more enjoyable for you as a hardcore fan, or well, what's your thoughts?
I can't really talk right now. I'm about to clock in and work, man. But I'm going to keep listening.
All right, man. I'll get back with you.
Okay.
Layman, what's your thoughts on that, Layman? What do you think, you know, now that we're having boxing without fans, as a hardcore fan, I really enjoy it. I can hear what's going on. I can hear the ring. The corners fighting here, you know, shouting out their instructions. I can actually hear the body shots when they're landing. You know, I think it's a little more intimate now. But that's me as a diehard fan. What do you think about, you know, the regular fan? And how are you enjoying it, you know, as a former champion?
Well, you know, man, change is good. Always, and you know, things never stay the same, and I'm just glad to see boxing making this conversion, if you will, because without televised fights, boxing would probably disappear about now, because you know, nobody feels safe enough to sit for hours next to one another. But I'm just glad that they have resolved this problem, and I think that you're just going to see boxing continue to grow. And it doesn't bother me, man. You know, like I say, you can hear the shots better. You can hear the commentating better. And I just think that it allows for fans to have more focus on the fighter, and at the same time, it doesn't sway the judges as much, because sometimes a guy could be losing a fight, but because he's fighting in his hometown with the fans on his side, it psychologically the energy in the air can sway the judges. And I've seen it plenty of times throughout my life. And so I think this is a good thing, man. I do.
What are your thoughts, Melissa?
Well, you know, at least it's back. And look, we've been starved for sports. We certainly know that, and it's giving people an opportunity to at least start to do their work. I mean, this is a very tough time that we're going through. I think, you know, as a fan, I like the crowds because it kind of adds some excitement and gives you a little more of the flavor of what it's like to be, you know, at an auditorium or, you know, a big arena. But I think the point is made on the intimacy of watching, you know, really, it's like you're truly at ringside and, you know, you're watching a very high-level sparring event because there's nobody else there. It's like, wow, you're the king, you're the queen, getting to watch this bout all by yourself. So that's kind of, that part of it's kind of cool. And I'm glad that, you know, these fighters are getting an opportunity to make a little bit of money and to at least exercise their, you know, the sport that they are dedicated to. And, you know, I just hope it continues to be safe. I know there was an issue on the first fight night with Michaela Mayer testing positive, and then, you know, it turned out she really wasn't positive. She had an antibiotic for the COVID disease. So, you know, there's some things that just need to be worked out in terms of the logistics, and that will only continue. And we also have to be mindful of the fact that COVID is continuing to rage around the country, so we need to make sure that everyone stays safe, you know, not only the fighters, but their trainers and the folks that come with them and all the officials and the folks that, you know, that do help put on the production. You know, they're not totally ever alone. There's still, you know, EMTs there and referees and security. And so the news folks are there. So, you know, we just need to be mindful that we continue to keep people safe during a time of real uncertainty.
You know, we all think about, you know, when we think about fighters, we think about, you know, them being invincible. Like, you know, we think about them coming down, you know, with normal injuries, bones, and things like that. But I guess to drive home, you know, that it can happen to anyone. We have seen Jamal Herring test positive for the coronavirus. And now one of boxing's greats is hospitalized, Mr. Roberto Duran. What are your thoughts? I mean, you know, like I said, you know, most people think boxers or you know, these sports figures, well, I guess other than basketball, you know, tend to think that, you know, that these people are invincible. Duran, I mean, you know, hey, one of the greatest of all times. Your thoughts?
Is that directed at me?
Yeah, first of all, yeah.
Well, you know, look, this is a very dangerous illness. And, you know, even if you have it in a light way, it is no joke. And there is no immunity. We still don't understand all of the characteristics of this illness. We don't know how it's evolving now that it's been in the population for 6 months. What we do know is that probably 20 to 25% of the population who gets COVID has it in a way that is serious enough to require hospitalization. And when they're in the hospital, they need a lot of treatment to stay alive. And so it behooves all of us to really put out the message of staying safe. And, you know, like Roberto Duran getting this illness, it's tragic. I mean, yes, he's one of the greatest boxers of all time, but he's also 69 years old. And we don't know what his underlying medical conditions are. And even though he may be the fittest 69-year-old in the world, he's still 69 years old. And that's going to, you know, increase the opportunity for this disease to wreak havoc through his body. What we all pray for is that, you know, he comes away from this okay and relatively unscathed. with no long-term effects. But I got to tell you, I was just reading about a 35-year-old woman who died in Chicago. You know, so it's not just people 70 years old who die of this. 20-year-olds die. 35-year-olds die. Athletes die of this. So, you know, we just have to take the common sense precautions that are being put out there and be mindful of social distancing and being mindful of wearing masks and so on. I mean, look, I'm living in New York. We've lost greats in the boxing world. We lost Mendez from Mendez Boxing. I mean, we've lost some really wonderful people. It ravaged New York early in its cycle, but when we see what's happening in Texas and in Florida and in Arizona, you know, our hearts break because we know what this is like and we know how hard this is going to be on the populations there and on the medical personnel and on the families. So it's a very human thing that we are all sitting and a part of, and it's up to us to support everyone who could possibly be at risk. And that includes, you know, being mindful of what it means to have fighters in a ring as close as they can possibly be with each other in a fight where and what that will mean to their health long term and what it means for them to be training and ensuring that everyone is doing their best to not only keep everything safe in the fight, but safe during training and all those other aspects that create that opportunity for that fight. So that's my feeling about it. I mean, it's just no joke. People have to take it seriously.
Jeff, I know I was talking to you one day and you were getting ready to go out and you were talking about putting on your gloves and your masks and things like that. What's your, when you look at, like I said, somebody like Roberto Duran, you look at another champion, Jamal Herring. I mean, Jamal, younger guy, we have to assume being a champion, relatively good shape. What's your take on this? Not just your everyday life, but as Melissa says, this sport.
So, I'm not clear on what you're asking me. You're asking, what is my take on the new normal?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's it. The new normal. There you go.
So to me, man, all my life I've had obstacles in front of me. And all my life I had to overcome them to be successful. So life is all about perspective. It's the difference between half full and half empty. So I'm going to look at this as another obstacle in my life that in order for me to be successful, I just have to accept. I can't wait it out. I can't go around it. I can't go through it. I can't go over it. So I'm just going to do the best thing that I can, man, and just go and just accept that it's something that I always have to do. I always have to wash my hands. I always have to wear a mask. I always have to be cognizant, if you will, of being around people, man, to make sure that they're not coughing, making sure that they're not sick or whatnot. You know, I have to do what it takes for me to not only survive, but I have to do whatever it takes for me to be successful. So if that's running, even in the summertime, even though I know there's bacteria and things out there, because we understand it's now to be a bacteria and not a virus, which is why it's been so misdiagnosed. But the point is, man, I'm preparing myself like, okay, every day of my life, I have to live with this. So this is the new norm. So it's not going to affect me. It's going to make some slight changes. But if you do something long enough, you'll forget about what you used to do. And so all I'm doing now, just like when I remember when I was younger and I was rushing to the airport, I just rushed to the gate. You know what I mean? But now
luggage check, is body check, is dogs, is everything, man, is bomb check. You know, so I adjusted to that and overcame that, and it was no big deal. Same thing, man. This is the exact same thing. This is just the new norm, and I'm accepting it. And anybody who's growing up in it, they not going to know anything different. This is the new norm.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it. But under this new norm, how does it affect your travel? Like you said, you just mentioned at that gate. You know, are you really going to be running up to that gate to sit with 60 other people for you know maybe an hour or 2 hour flight and recycle there? Are you going to be willing to when your children are invited to jump up and down, or the people beside you? Up and down or behind you, are you always going to be able to maintain that social distancing in a large event? You know, what about those adjustments as far as you're concerned when you're probably, you know, your occupation requires a certain amount of travel? Being a public figure demands that you make certain amount of physical appearances, personal appearances. How do you get from place to place? How do you decide what events are important enough for you to go to? And, you know, how do you decide which ones are, you know, well, how do you prioritize these things, I guess?
Well, I can answer that very easy. And it's an old saying, one that we're all familiar with. If you plan to fail, it's because you failed to plan. So other than just doing things on a whim, now everything has to be planned out. And it's just that simple. You have to think. This is the age of thinking. This is not the age for dummies. Dummies walk out there with no mask and gloves and die, potentially. Preparation, baby. Preparation.
Melissa, what about yourself? I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, like it might not be as far for you, but I mean, you know, even, you know, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island area, let alone maybe going down to D.C., things like that, going out to Vegas, coming out here to California. How is this current climate affecting your plans
Well, you know, I've been working from home since the end of March. My whole team is. We're all working remote. I work in government, but we're going to be very slow coming back. Only our essential workers are actually having any kind of interaction in an office setting. In terms of my personal, I mean, the gyms are closed. Everything's pretty much closed. We're on what's known as second phase now in New York City. So restaurants are open to eat outside and so on. But I'm still very conservative. I wear a mask when I'm outside. I wear gloves. I always have hand sanitizer with me. I don't interact with a lot of people. Although I have done things such as I unfortunately fractured my wrist and needed surgery about 8 weeks ago, so in the midst of all of this. So I had to do things like go to occupational therapy, which is a little challenging and it's a little nerve-wracking, but I go, and I'm particularly cautious about constantly sanitizing everything that I work on. Keeping the masks on. I mean, it's basically personal responsibility. You know, my husband is older. He's got medical conditions, so I'm particularly mindful to keep him healthy. And he barely goes out at all because it's just still, even though it's much less, if he gets sick, it means, I don't know what it'll mean, but it won't be good. So It's kind of taking that perspective. I'd rather be conservative and, you know, lose a year of traveling around and be healthy and keep my family healthy and safe than not. I have had events that have been canceled. The International Women's Boxing Hall of Fame was canceled this year, so that was supposed to be in August, so that's not going to happen. The Boxing Hall of Fame was supposed to be in June. That was the first induction of women into the Boxing Hall of Fame up in Canastota. That didn't happen. I have had personal things that I've had long planned that have been canceled. I don't know if you all know this, but I was actually in the Peace Corps. I have my 25th anniversary. It's supposed to be Labor Day weekend in Chicago, and we just called it. Just 2 days ago, we realized that there's just too much COVID going on, and we really couldn't trust that everyone would be safe enough to fly, so we canceled that event. So, you know, in the scheme of things, it's you just got to do what you got to do. And I'm just grateful I have a job. I'm grateful I have insurance. There are people in this city who are, you know, as we speak, don't have food to eat. They don't have money to pay their rent. So I'm one of the blessed, lucky ones. So I have nothing to complain about. I'm just glad I'm alive and healthy and safe and my family's safe. You know, I feel bad for the guys in the gym because they're not making a living. And unfortunately, because of my injury, I can't even, you know, exercise at all. So I can't even do, like, remote boxing. I can't hit anything right now. But, again, I think we all just have to take personal responsibility for ourselves, our families, and then for our community. And, you know, when I got to tell you the truth, when I see people without a mask on, I want to slap them silly. Because this is no joke.
This is totally unrelated to boxing, but when you talk about the, I remember that you said that you were part of New York governmental system there. And one thing that I was wondering, I'm in one of those states that, you know, possibly, well, the numbers are definitely on the rise. And the last time I listened to Governor Cuomo, he was talking about if people from certain states come into New York, they might be quarantined for 14 days. Well, you know,
yep.
Hey, I'm coming in from California, or, you know, not necessarily Los Angeles, where there's a big rise, but I am coming from California. People coming from Texas, I think, was on that list, from Florida. Have you heard anything about that? Because
they're looking to put that in place. The same thing with New Jersey. It's basically people from Florida, Arizona, and Texas right now. And in fact, Trump was supposed to go to New Jersey this weekend to his private golf club, and they ended up saying no, in part because, you know, there's supposed to be a quarantine for people who've been to Arizona. And since his whole team had just been there, there was going to be a big issue with that. So, yeah, there is, if you're coming in from Florida or Texas or Arizona right now, you're supposed to go into 14-day quarantine. And, you know, look, 3 months ago, people coming from New York, landing in Florida, had to go sit in quarantine for 14 days. There was an outbreak that was just reported. A kid who had been in Florida, a high schooler or a young college kid, got sick, came to New York, or caught the virus, came to New York, and then got sick and infected a whole bunch of other folks. So, and this is before the quarantine was put in place. So, Governor Cuomo was very mindful of looking at how we can contain any outbreaks. And, you know, there's a full contact tracing program in place in New York State, so that if one does test positive, one works with public health officials to relate everyone you've had interactions with so that those folks can be notified and quarantined. That's how that works. I had colleagues where I work who became ill and quarantined myself for 14 days. That was easy because I was already at home, so I wasn't going anywhere anyway. But I absolutely quarantined myself because we had an outbreak at my office, and unfortunately one person passed away. So he had underlying conditions, but he was not, you know, he was in his 50s. This is really serious stuff. And the more this goes on, you know, more and more, when this first started, the thought was, it's an old people's disease, only old people get sick. Well, that's not true. You know, everybody gets sick. And there's really no particular understanding yet as to why, if two people have the illness, one gets really sick and the other doesn't. That's still not clearly understood. So one has to assume that one will not skirt through, but have a full-blown illness and potentially infect others. So, it's just personal responsibility.
Well, let's talk about something a little bit more pleasant. You mentioned it, the Hall of Fame, this year's class. To say anything else, to use any other word, I think I thought it was spectacular. But unfortunately, as you said, we're not going to be able to have the meeting in Conestoga or the formerly planned meeting in New York. But tell us a little bit about the ladies that are going into the Hall of Fame, and what are you looking forward to in 2021? When you're going to have a double ceremony.
Yeah, and there'll be a double ceremony for both, which is really exciting. The ballots will be coming out for the International Boxing Hall of Fame, you know, in the late summer, early September, and same time frame for the International Women's Boxing Hall of Fame. But the great thing about the Boxing Hall of Fame was, it's the 20th anniversary, and it's the first time that women are being inducted. Christy Martin, who is just, you know, a true pioneer of the modern era of women's boxing, is being inducted alongside Lucia Riker. Both of these women were remarkable fighters and really gave their all to the sport. And then on the pioneer, which is any what's called the pioneer, which is any woman who boxed prior to the 80s or completed their boxing prior to, like, I think 1985, something like that, is Barbara Buttrick, who was known as the Mighty Atom. But she started boxing in England in 1949 and went around and was not allowed to box professionally in any of the recognized sporting arenas. So she started to box in carnivals all around England, and then she toured England, then she toured France, and then she came to the United States and started barnstorming in boxing venues, mostly in the Midwest in the early 1950s. She also did tag team wrestling and eventually became the first women's bout to be legalized in the state of Texas. So that was pretty cool in the mid-1950s. She also had the first legally sanctioned bout in that was ever broadcast on the radio in Canada. And then eventually she settled in Florida, had the first sanctioned women's bout in Florida in the early 60s. And she kind of went into retirement for a while when she had her children. And then in the 70s, she came back into the sport on the promoter side and actually started the WIBA, which was the Women's International Boxing Association, boards, you know, basically that was a sanctioning body, and put together one of the largest all female cards in Vegas in the 1980s. So she is, I mean, being recognized for her sporting, her boxing prowess, but with also a nod to her incredible support of the sport as it's evolved since the 1980s.
I know that you were well invested in that, and like I said, I'm kind of interested to see how this is going to all hang show itself out. I would love to be at this 2021 induction. Let's hope that things work out. Layman, let's see. We got D-Hop, Juan Manuel Marquez, Trigger Shane Mosley, Dan Goosey, all in the 2020 Hall of Fame class. What was your thoughts on that class, Layman?
You saying for the Hall of Fame?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. That would have been pretty big. That would have been a great turnout, man. And you know, it's just, you know, what can you do? You know, like I said, we just got to make that adjustment. But those are great names, that, and rightfully so, that deserve to be awarded that, man. I mean, for their contributions to the sport, you know.
Yeah, and then you had folks like Lou DiBella. I mean, he's great. That's a really good choice.
Oh, Lou is coming in this year?
Yep.
Oh, wow. That's cool, man.
Really well deserved.
Yeah. Like I said, I thought this was one of the great classes. And it's just a shame that, you know, we weren't able to do it this year, but you know, thinking about what could be done next year in a double, a double performance of these things. Was this your first or second year for the Women's Hall of Fame?
No, it's the fifth year. This was the fifth year. Yep, and. We had a ceremony last August in 2019. It was really wonderful. We were going to have it in Vegas this year in August, but it's now been moved to March. And, you know, fingers crossed we'll be able to have it. You know, we just don't know. But that's the plan at this point, is for towards the end of March in Las Vegas at the Orleans Hotel. So that'll be really cool, and try to have some kind of bounce as well.
You guys designing the wing, a new wing, as the ground.
Can't hear you, JK.
I said, you thought about what was the talk about a new wing for the women, Melissa?
Well, in Canastota, there will be an exhibit for women's boxing. One will be show a timeline for sort of the modern era, and one will be a timeline for the pioneer era, starting with a mention of women who boxed in the early 1700s. So it's kind of exciting, really. And then they'll start to collect memorabilia and start to put that into, you know, their exhibits from various female boxers. So that's very exciting.
I talked a little earlier to study. I know we talked about the heavyweight division, but right now the division, it seems to be having a lot of competition, and I mean really good competition, is that 130-pound division. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch the fights last night. Did you get a chance to watch any of the bouts last night, Layman?
No, I did not, man. Unfortunately, I didn't get to Wife had me busy. she put me to work.
But what about that 130-pound division? What do you think about that 130-pound division? Got a lot of great young talent there. They all seem to be making great use of social media. Right now, do you think that this might be one of the most exciting divisions in boxing, as far as the fans wanting to see them and the constant action?
Who do we got at 130? Who are we talking about at
130, 135? Tank.
Oh yeah, Tank, Devin Haney, Lomachenko. Yeah, well, you know what, man? It's gonna be very interesting. That Lomachenko is the man. Devin Haney is the young man, and Tank. It is a very, very exciting division, and I think it's the most popular division to be in right now. You know, every decade you always have one weight class that is always like the most dominant, dominating weight out of all other classes, whether it's welterweight, middleweight, heavyweight, light heavyweight, whatever, you know. And I think this is that era, man. The Lomachenko, like you were alluding to, Lomachenko, Devin Haney, Tank, like this. I'm excited about it, and I rarely get excited about divisions. Especially in these days, because of the fighters aren't the fighters that they used to be, in my opinion, from the mentality that they have versus when we were fighting. But at the same time, man, this is a very great division, and I'm definitely looking forward to see who's going to be the reigning king. Will Lomachenko stay at the top, or will he be dethroned?
What's your thoughts, Melissa?
Yep. I can't hear you very well. What was the question? Oh, in terms of the lightweight division? Well, yeah, Lomachenko is, just crazy. I mean, I feel bad that these guys just haven't really been able to fight much. I like Gervonta Davis. He's kind of cool. Devin Haney, of course. I was not able to watch the boxing last night. I'm going to at some point watch it this week. Just had other things that were going on in my world. But I think there's excitement in a lot of these different kinds of divisions. These guys are really hungry. They're really, really skilled. And when they're fighting each other, they seem to be well matched, or as long as we can keep those matches close. I'm not sure, who can really go after Lomachenko at this point, but we'll see how that all plays out as things start to come back. I mean, on the other hand, Loma hasn't fought for almost a year at this point, so we don't know whether there'll be any kind of ring rust on him or how this is really going to play out. I mean, let's face it, only Top Rank is doing boxing right now, so there's all of those concerns, and seeing as things open up what those opportunities are going to look like. So I think that will play a little bit into what the staging of these matches are going to look like at that elite level.
Well, tonight we're going to do ladies first, and Melissa, I want you to give us your final thoughts and make sure everybody can find you on social media.
Sure. Well, there is a lot heating up in the women's division. There's been talk of Katie Taylor fighting Amanda Serrano. There's a whole Twitter war going on with a lot of she said, in terms of whether they're actually going to have a fight in August. So that's been interesting. On the other side of that, Taylor's now been looking at maybe doing a rematch with Delphine Persson. when Katie Taylor was able to win her undisputed lightweight title on the female side. So, as I said, that's looking to happen in England in August. So we'll see what actually transpires there. There are some other big fights coming up. Claressa Shields is talking about a fight in the early fall, potentially at the 154-pound division or 160. They haven't quite decided on that yet. So there are, certainly at the elite level, there's real talk of coming back into it. Because of COVID, we lost a really great opportunity for a fight with Michaela Mayer and Melissa Hernandez. And then when Michaela was supposed to fight on the first top right card on ESPN, she was then slated to, she wasn't going to fight Melissa Hernandez. Turned out she was going to fight Helen Joseph, who's an African fighter who fights at a Mendez gym in New York. And then because of the COVID fighting, that fight was canceled. So not sure what's going to happen there. But that, if she's fighting, whether it's a Melissa Hernandez or a Helen Joseph, that's going to be a very exciting bout to watch. So there's really some nice opportunities coming up front on the women's side. And other than that, I just hope everyone's well, staying safe. I'm on Twitter, Girl Boxing Now, Instagram, Girl Boxing Now. And hope to see you all on social media. And thank you, as always, for this opportunity to talk boxing.
Thank you, Melissa. We look forward to talking to you soon. As soon as we find out what's going on with some of these fights, we're looking forward to them.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Give us your final thoughts. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, as always, my name is Relentless Layman Brewster. I'm the former heavyweight champion of the world. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And, you know, I like to talk about a lot of things that's going on in the world. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm a boxing, I don't know what the word, I'm not the professor, because I don't want to insult the professor, but, you know, I've been doing this since 1980, since I was 7 years old, and God has been good to me by blessing me with boxing, giving me the chance to leave my confines and being able to see the world and meet great people and just see diversity. And, you know, right now, that the one thing that I can definitely say for boxing has taught me that race does not matter, and the only thing that you judge a person on is by their conversation. You judge them by their actions and not by their color. And you can't allow people to sway you to feel a certain way about somebody because of the complexion or their skin, or because they may be privileged, or because, you know, whatever reasons, you know, you judge a book cover. You open that book and read it, and that's every individual walking the face of this earth. There are people just like me that I wouldn't turn my back on for fear of that they may put a stake through my heart like I'm a vampire or something. But the point is, boxing has been that conduit, if you will, that has allowed me to travel the world, to walk hand in hand with all kind of people and all different races. So I just say, man, love is not a color. So let's not judge each other by color. Let's judge people by their deeds. You don't judge a tree by how vast it is. You judge it by the fruit that it produces. And so that's what I really want to say, because I just feel like it just needs to be said, man. I love everybody out there. Thank you for supporting boxing. And thank you, JK, for this opportunity to be heard, man. God bless you.
Hey, thank you, brother, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. You have a great night. Keep you and your family safe.
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll talk to you again next Sunday right here on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great weekend, everyone.